Chapter 12. The Incongruity of the Jewish God. Throughout the Bible, and especially in the New Testament, we are continuously urged to become more perfect, more godlike. We are continuously told that we are a collection of no good, worthless sinners. We are told that our shortcomings and our weaknesses are as numberless as the stars in the heavens. In contrast to this, we are reminded again and again how perfect is the Jewish God, as portrayed in the Scriptures. We are told that God is kind, He is loving, He is gracious, He is the incorporation of all wisdom. He knows everything that has happened and everything that will happen, and not a hair falls from our head, but that God wills it. We are told He is merciful and forgiving. In the Sermon on the Mount, we are told that we must be humble, that we must be meek, that our mind must become simple like a little child, above all, gullible to the extreme. We are continuously told that we should forgive others their trespasses. We are told that we must be forgiving, and that everybody is our brother. Above all, we are told again and again that our main purpose in life is to amplify the greater glory of God. In other words, praise God continuously, fervently, and endlessly. What scanty information we have about our activities in heaven, in fact, seems to be concerned mostly with the endless praising of the Lord. If we are to believe the Jewish scriptwriters, then, in fact, the only purpose that the Lord created us for was to harvest everlasting praise from our automated lips into all eternity. We, on the other hand, are told that pride and vanity are a dastardly sin. Having laid these few ground rules, let us examine how ridiculous is the Jewish conception of their God, compared to those qualities that we are told we must strive for to become more perfect, more godlike. In so doing, let us remember that we are not really examining any real God, of which we find a shred of evidence in the realm of nature, or in the realm of facts, but merely a conception of a God as set forth by a parcel of Jewish scriptwriters. Let us first of all examine the quality of kindness. We are told that we must, of course, be kind and gentle and loving. If these are godly attributes, just how kind and gentle and loving is this Jewish God? When we ask that question, the whole Jewish conception of creation and philosophy of life breaks down and becomes a ridiculous shamble. In the first place, before He even created man and mankind, according to the Jewish scriptwriters, He created heaven and earth. Evidently, at the same time, He also created hell, because it is the counterpart of heaven. He also, at this time, must have created the devil. Christian apologists lamely explain that he, the devil, was actually created a loving angel, but he fell. This is, of course, a silly and ludicrous explanation. For a God who knows all, sees all, creates all, can destroy all, to accidentally have created something he thought was a lovely angel, but turned out to be a vicious devil, is too ridiculous for anybody to believe. It is a lame-brained explanation indeed, and one would have to be an idiot to swallow that kind of preposterous and laughable explanation. According to the Jewish scriptwriters, we evidently have a God there that before He even created the human race had already created a huge, fiery, hot torture chamber into which he would confine most of us poor, miserable creatures for all time to come, into all eternity. By any standards, by any line of reasoning, by any evaluation whatsoever, this is about the most monstrous, the most heinous, the most cruel planned torture operation that could possibly be conceived by God or man. When we compare this long-lasting torture, which is not even mitigated by the mercy of ending it all by death, then all other ghastly crimes of history fade into pale insignificance. When we compare it to what the savage Indians did in scalping and torturing their prisoners, when we compare it to the beastly killings of the Jewish communists of 20 million white Russians, when we compare it to the murder and slaughter of 50 million victims in China by the Chinese communists, when we compare it to all the ghastly crimes of humanity put together in all history, that of our most wonderful, loving God as described by the Jewish scriptwriters surpasses all a million times over. No, a kind and loving God he is not. When we examine what the Bible says he has in store for us poor miserable human beings that he himself created, then he is one of the most fiendish, tortuous, and ghastly sadists that could possibly be conceived by anybody. Then we are told that our God is just. We are told that justice is a godly attribute. We are told that we are all equal in the eyes of the Lord. Let us examine exactly how just is our Jewish God. According to the Jewish scriptwriters, in the Old Testament, we are told again and again that the Jews are God's chosen people. We are reminded throughout the various chapters that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had special sweetheart agreements with this Jewish God. The sweetheart arrangement wasn't just merely limited to promises made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but was repeated again and again to people like David and Solomon and other murderous whoremongers. If we read chapters of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Joshua, Isaiah, Kings, Chronicles, and many other books and chapters throughout the Old Testament, we find nothing but bloody murders, slaying, killing, genocide, vengeance, and retribution inflicted by the Jews upon their enemies. Always the Jews are victorious, and their enemies are slaughtered. No matter how beastly the Jews are, how many tribes they invade, rob of their land, kill their men, women, and children, the Lord is always with them. The Lord is always blessing them. The Lord is always looking with a kindly favor upon their murderous and treacherous acts. The Israelites can violate every law set forth in the Ten Commandments, or anywhere else, but the Lord blesses them. They can kill, murder, lie, steal, cheat, deceive, commit untold treacheries, but the Lord is all for them. After all, he tells them again and again they are his special people, and he is all for them. If by any stretch of the imagination a gullible fool can be brought to believe that condoning and promoting this kind of murder and treachery is justice dispensed by a wise and just God, then any further claim we might have to an ounce of reasoning goes completely out the window. How this can be reconciled with the claim that we are all equal in the eyes of the Lord, and that he is kind and just, is about as stupid and ridiculous as anything that has ever been set down on paper by the Jewish scriptwriters or anybody else. To substantiate the above, all anybody has to do is read the Old Testament, especially the books that I mentioned above. The evidence is so overwhelming and so massive that I need hardly waste any further space in quoting page after page, chapter after chapter. Nor should, the white race have any misconceptions about the God the Jews concoct as also being our God, i.e., the white man's God. As described by the Jews, he is strictly a Jewish God. He is eternally and forever on their side, helping them slay, murder, and mutilate their enemies. And who are the Jews' enemies? His most dire hate is directed at the white man. He hates the white race with an unreasonable, pathological hate. Exodus 29:45-46 says, "And this is the Lord speaking, and I will dwell among the children of Israel, and I will be their God." In Exodus 34:11, God says, "Behold, I drive out before thee the Ammonite, and the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite." And further, verse 13, "But ye shall destroy their altars, break their images, and cut down their groves." In other words, kill, ravage, and destroy. Exterminate all other races to make room for the Jews. God himself will lead the way for these pirates, robbers, and murderers. Where did we ever get the idea he was on our side? Where did we get the idea we are all equal in the eyes of the Lord? In Deuteronomy 7:6, again God speaking, "For thou art a holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself, above all people that are upon the face of the earth." If that isn't abundantly clear, I don't know what is. He is saying again and again that he is all for this murderous tribe, the Jews. He will lead them. He will fight for them. He will help them kill, murder, loot, ravage, pillage, and destroy. And who is on the receiving end of all this mayhem? Why, we, the Gentiles, are. Plainly, we are God's and the Jews' enemy. And plainly, he is our enemy. This is the way the Bible tells it. This is the way the Jewish scriptwriters wrote it. We should have no illusions about it. This is neither the white man's God, nor is this any part of the white man's religion, nor is the Bible the white man's holy book. On the contrary, that book was written by our most deadly enemies for our destruction. So far, we have seen overwhelmingly that the Jewish conception of God is neither kind, nor is it loving. Nor is such a God a just God. Let us examine the idea that he is so all-embracingly wise, and that, to quote, "Not a hair falls from our head, nor a sparrow from the roof, but he is there, and he wills it, and knows it, and it only happens because he wants it to happen." In the first place, for such an all-wise and all-knowing God to choose a treacherous and perfidious race like the Jews as his favorites is neither just, nor is it wise. Not only is it utterly stupid, but it is a treacherous betrayal of the overwhelming majority of mankind, a vast humanity which he himself has created, according to the Bible. By their own account, in the Old Testament, the Jews are deceitful, treacherous, and almost their entire history abound with murder, warfare, killing, and thievery. Any God that would ally himself with this kind of criminal element certainly has not earned our love or our respect, nor can such a God have any claim to justice, wisdom, reverence, or fair play. I must again remind the reader that we are not really considering any real God in coming to these conclusions, but we are examining the irrational ramblings of the Jewish scriptwriters who wrote the Old Testament. When we do start examining this mess of garbage, we find it is pretty sad merchandise. Pursuing further the idea of the Jewish God, as portrayed by these scriptwriters being all-wise, we find it rather peculiar that he should have picked such associates as Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whom we have found in previous chapters to be deceitful, treacherous, immoral, and most despicable. We find it hard to believe that he would pick as his chosen such lecherous whoremongers as Judah, who fornicated with his daughter-in-law, thinking she was just an ordinary roadside whore. We find it hard to believe that such a God would be particularly enamored by such profligates as David, who betrayed one of his most loyal warriors, Uriah, stole his wife, and then sent him to the front lines of battle to be murdered. How such a wise and just God could be enamored of such a scoundrel, bless him, and heap special favors upon him, is beyond anybody's comprehension of wisdom and justice. We read the story of Abraham and Sarah, whom the Jewish God chose specially to be the progenitors of his chosen race. We find that Abraham was a pimp of the worst kind, pawning off his wife, who was also his sister, as a prostitute for loot. This makes Abraham a pimp and Sarah a whore, in the full sense of these words. That a wise and righteous God would choose such a foul and reprehensible couple as his special chosen to be the founders of a special and favored race is inconceivable. That they should bear their first son when they were 99 and 90 respectively would be laughable if it were not so idiotic. That they were brother and sister heaps incest and crime against nature further upon an already foul and lurid story. Why should the noble white man worship such trash? We go further to King Solomon. We find that this scurrilous panderer and whoremaster accumulated unto himself 700 wives and 300 concubines of many strange races. Reading through the Jewish scriptwriter's gibberish, we find that the wise and just God heaped upon this man another special covenant, another sweetheart agreement, blessing him and his seed. On reading further, we find that Solomon was endowed with great wisdom by the good Lord himself. Reading on, we find that Solomon not only indulged in acquiring as many women as he could get his hands on, but he forsook the religion and worship of his own God, and turned to the worship of the strange gods of the heathen whores and concubines that he had assembled. This would certainly seem to indicate that the Jewish God's choice of favorites was not only in bad taste, but it was utterly stupid. Yet we are to believe that these kinds of villains, seducers, scoundrels, and reprobates were the exclusive choice of a just and wise God. Again, I must repeat that this is not at all relevant to any real phenomenon in nature, but merely the gibberish and drivel of a passel of Jewish scriptwriters, exact identity unknown. Examining further how wise this Jewish God was, we find that throughout the Old Testament, this Jewish God seems to stumble from one bad blunder into the next. In the first place, he created Adam and Eve, whom we are led to believe were to live forever in the Garden of Eden. Hardly a day had passed, but the programs and plans of this all-knowing, all-wise God ran into trouble. According to the Jewish scriptwriters, Adam and Eve turned out badly and were driven out of the Garden of Eden. Nor is that all. Their offspring, as they multiplied, with whom did Cain mate, were such a bad lot that the good Lord, who had created them all, saw fit to kill and execute them all by drowning, except for one family. One might well ask at this point, If God is so wise and all-knowing, if He knows everything forwards and backwards, how does it happen He didn't foresee how His creation would turn out? Or if everything turns out exactly the way God wills it, then isn't it logical to assume that God had created man in such a manner that he would turn out bad? And hadn't he planned to drown them later? Hadn't he further planned to send most of them into his fiery torture chamber, which he had created even before he created man? In following further, the story of mankind as set forth by the Jewish scriptwriters in the Old Testament, we find that this is not the end of the tragic torment imposed upon a long and suffering mankind by their Creator. We are then told that this Jewish God, in a desperate attempt to save mankind, resorted to an attempted solution that surpasses all. We are told by the Jewish scriptwriters that this God then descended upon a Jewish woman, who, although being married, was claimed to be a virgin, got her pregnant, and she bore him a son. All this was done only so that this son could grow up, be nailed to a cross, and die for all the sinners. This is, of course, an extremely ridiculous story when we relate the whole episode to the enormity of the universe itself, the timelessness with which the universe has existed over the billions of years, and time eternal, the long history and development of mankind itself, spanning a period of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years. But even taking the Jewish scriptwriters at their word, this caper evidently also turned out to be a disastrous blooper. So evidently the Jewish God had blundered again. 2,000 years after this episode supposedly is to have happened, we find that most of the world doesn't believe this cock and bull story, that we have more wars, crime and killings than the world has ever known before, that Christianity itself is virulently sick. We find that the Jews and the communists are winning the world, and that neither one of these two, or shall we say one, believes in Christianity itself. So we find that seemingly God has consistently chosen the worst of the criminal element people as his chosen, and has made far-reaching sweetheart agreements with this kind of people in preference to the rest of mankind. Certainly, this is neither wise nor is it just. We find that he has continually blundered from one idiotic and tragic catastrophe to another in guiding the human race which he supposedly created. We find further, much to our horror, that he has planned to send the overwhelming majority of his creation into an eternal hell, a fiery torture chamber in which these poor, miserable victims are to be burned and tortured for time everlasting. We find that although the Jews wrote the New Testament and sold the idea of Christianity to the white race, they themselves don't believe a word of it. For many years, long before I ever even saw through the Jewish Christian hoax, I had been puzzled by the one-sided phenomena of thanking God, from whom presumably all blessings flowed. I was not only puzzled, but irritated. If a man worked hard all his life, used relatively good judgment, kept out of trouble, and built up a comfortable nest egg, why then he should be thankful to God, because God gave him everything he had, no credit at all to the productive, responsible individual. If, on the other hand, he was unfortunate enough to be beset by fire, flood, famine, disease, pestilence, war, death, and disaster, why then God was completely absolved of any responsibility? This is the way it is presented by the organized churches. Having committed the crime of being successful and prosperous, a productive citizen is then beset by these Jewish people to give give, and give some more. And no matter how generously such a deluded victim gives, it is never enough. He is denounced as a greedy miser and urged to give more. According to the Christian creed, God does not bear any responsibility for all the evils and disasters that have plagued mankind throughout the ages. Usually, the preachers will add insult to injury by implicating those unfortunate souls stricken with disaster by charging they deserved it. They will imply that somehow they were justly being punished for their sins. How strange! How idiotic! It seems to me, if God is to be given credit for all the good things in life, then he should also be held responsible for all the evils and disasters that befall mankind. If we must credit him for a productive rain, then he must also bear the blame for a disastrous flood. If we should credit him for wealth, then we must also blame him for sickness and death. If he is responsible for a bountiful crop, then he is also responsible for famine and starvation. If we are to thank him for peace and plenty, then we must also charge him for plaguing us with war, revolution, communism, murder, famine, and starvation. Again, this is another one of these inconsistent incongruities palmed off on the gullible. This too tends to destroy your own self-confidence and strengthen the idea of blind faith. So in summation, we find that the story as set forth by the Jewish scriptwriters in the Old Testament and the New Testament breaks down miserably when exposed to the light of reason and examination. We find that the conception of the Jewish God, as portrayed by these deceitful scriptwriters, is completely incongruous. It contradicts itself. It is so absurd and preposterous that a person would have to take leave of his senses to swallow such Jewish gibberish. We find that their conception of a God is not at all kind and loving, but on the contrary, he is most viciously cruel. We find that he is not at all just, but on the contrary, is criminally prejudiced towards a murderous and treacherous race of people, namely, the Jews. Nor can we conclude that he is very wise, as is evidenced by one blunder after another, through which he leads a long-suffering mankind. Significantly, all these blunders tend to heap suffering and misery upon us, the human race. Nor can we say that he is a forgiving God. We read continuously in the Old Testament about the Lord threatening that vengeance is mine. When someone displeased him, such as two of Judah's sons, he slew them, much as a gangster would get rid of his enemy. Yet we are told that if we employed such tactics, we would be committing the gravest of all crimes. What an idiotic set of double standards! We are told we should become more godlike, but if we follow any of these godlike examples, we are condemned as the worst of criminals. No matter which way we turn, we are wrong. No matter what criminal acts God commits, he's perfect. How can we ever win with a set of rules like that? Not only are most of his actions criminal, but are also viciously cruel. In the end, we find that not only is he not forgiving, but all the great majority of his beloved humanity he created is destined to suffer eternal agony in hellfire, a miserable suffering from which there is no reprieve, from which there is no escape, and to which there is no end. We find further that whereas we are admonished not to have pride, whereas we are told to be humble, the Jewish God himself is the most vain, glorious, and conceited phenomenon that anybody could possibly imagine. In fact, These Jewish script writers tell us that our main purpose in being created at all is so that the Creator himself could utilize us in harvesting eternal praise from our automated lips. Whether we like it or not, we are supposed to sing eternal praise to this Jewish God because he is wise, because he is loving, because he is kind, because he is just. Since, as we have seen, he is none of these things, we are evidently supposed to be manipulated like a herd of stooges or robots to heap praise on an impossible and cruel tyrant. There is one other serious credibility gap in this whole Jewish story that no preacher has ever explained to me. If the devil is such a bad character, why did God create him in the first place? Why did he let this polished con artist loose on naive, newly created Adam and Eve? Or having created him, and having made the most monumental blooper of all time, why didn't he quickly rectify his mistake? Why didn't he just simply kill the devil, as he did to Judah's two sons? Why prolong this endlessly drawn-out cat-and-mouse game, where we poor human beings are the pawns? Why is God taking such a severe trouncing from his own creation? Since most people are going to hell, evidently God is losing badly. Does this make any sense? It does not. One other thing. If the eternal destiny of millions of poor souls is at stake, why is God so obscure, so coy, so terribly confusing about the issues? We have 17 versions of the Bible. We have the Book of Mormon. We have Confucius's teachings. We have the Mohammedan Quran. In fact, we have 1,001 different stories being circulated as to what is the true religion. If the issues are 1,000 times more important than life itself, you would think God would reveal himself to the 4 billion people living today and make the issues crystal clear before sending them into the fiery furnace in all eternity. If he were real, he would owe mankind that, to say the very least. If in the days of the Israelites, he could come down to earth and indulge in such nonsense as wrestling with Jacob all night, you would think the very least he could do would be to reveal himself to the 4 billion inhabitants of the world today. You would think the very least he could do would be to reveal himself to the 4 billion inhabitants of the earth today. In any case, such is the story of the demented ramblings of the Jewish scriptwriters. Identity unknown. It is their story, not mine. I didn't write it. They did. They are rambling about a god as unreal and imaginary as are Zeus, Mars, Jupiter, and 1,000 others concocted by the imaginary meanderings of the human fantasy. After you have backed these Jesus people against the wall with their own incongruous and contradictory claims, they will make one desperate last-ditch stand. They will come back at you with the non sequitur. But surely you believe in a supreme being. Surely you believe in a creator. Somebody had to make all this. If God didn't, who did? The answer to this old trick question is so obvious, it would occur even to a 10-year-old. If somebody had to make everything first, then it is just as logical to assume somebody first had to create God. So who created God? But oh, they then abandon that line of reasoning and say, God always existed. Very well. If you want to go that route, then it is also logical to assume the universe could always have existed. In fact, it seems more logical to me that it always did exist, rather than just pop out of nothing 6,000 years ago, as these Jewish scriptwriters would have you believe. Certainly, the evidence is massive and overwhelming that the universe has existed for billions of years, if not eternally. But how it ever started, if there ever was a start, nobody has the answer to this mystery of the universe, least of all these perfidious Jewish scriptwriters. The fact is, there are millions of mysteries in the realm of nature the human mind has not solved. And the beginning of the universe, if there was a beginning, is one of those unsolved mysteries. In this regard, I will venture two fairly safe predictions. A. The human mind never will solve all the myriads of nature's mysteries. B. The white race of the future will solve more of nature's mysterious laws than have been solved in all past history. In fact, our accumulation of knowledge is accelerating at such a fantastic rate that it is hard to comprehend, whereas during 1,000 years of the Dark Ages, it progressed hardly at all. It is now doubling and redoubling in an ever shorter time span, such interval of doubling now being less than a decade. Be that as it may, certainly the cock and bull story as related in Genesis is no explanation at all. It creates nothing but a mass of confusion and explains nothing. Nor is it of utmost importance that we over preoccupy ourselves with this pointless pontification of how it all started. This is about as useless a speculation as when, during the Dark Ages, the clerics indulged in the argument as to how many angels could dance on the head of a pin. We have much more urgent and immediate problems to solve, and the most urgent is the preservation of our own species, the crowning glory of nature, namely the white race. This is what nature tells us to do, and this is what we must do, and this is what we will do. We of the Church of the Creator categorically reject this Jewish conception of such an impossible and contradictory conglomeration. Again, I reiterate that all the truths that we have accumulated over the ages derive from our observation of the laws of nature and the phenomena of nature itself. Any conceptions or misconceptions that we might entertain in contradiction to the laws of nature and the truths we have derived from the observation of nature can be rejected as the irrational ramblings of an unhinged mind. In this category, we might well place the conception of the Jewish God as set forth by the Jewish scriptwriters of unknown identity. Thank you.